Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. 3 weeks after voters in Arizona went to the polls, they are still trying to figure out what they've done. Now, one thing is not in dispute. People in Arizona did pass Proposition 200, designed to crack down on illegal immigrants. Well, in Arizona, of course, that means people from Mexico. It seems simple enough. Everyone in Arizona, they say, will now be asked to provide proof of citizenship before collecting what are called public benefits. The argument is over what's actually meant by public benefits. The state's attorney general says it only refers to welfare and voting. But those pushing for a broader interpretation say public benefits ought to include health care and college education, unemployment assistance, perhaps even access to libraries. So as Arizona debates who is eligible for what, we invite you in as well. Is it time to crack down on the access to public benefits and services if they're being used by people who are here in this country illegally? Should there be tougher rules in the southern border states like Arizona? Or is this access to public services something that should not be regulated, something that's been historically and traditionally available to anyone in this country? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we have a number of people lined up to help us with the story. We're going to start with Amanda Crawford. She's a reporter with the Arizona Republic newspaper, and she's been covering the Prop 200 legal battle. She's joining us now on the line from Phoenix. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Dick. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being with us. What is the latest state of this argument on the definition of public benefits? Has it already gone to the courts?
It hasn't gone to the courts yet. There has been a special action filed in a superior court by some of the proponents who are seeking now, post-election, to kind of expand it and challenge the Attorney General's opinion so that it applies to public benefits beyond welfare, as you mentioned. That has been filed, but certainly hasn't been heard yet, and we're all waiting as opponents are expected to file lawsuits once this measure becomes law.
Now, nothing yet has changed, is that right? Nobody's being asked to produce proof of citizenship at this point in Arizona.
That's right, because it doesn't become law until after the governor actually proclaims the results of the election. The election results were certified by the Secretary of State on Monday, and the governor, by the Constitution, has to proclaim it forthwith, which means she has a little bit of time. It can be a couple weeks before it goes into law with her proclamation. And she has indicated that she's going to wait until at least the state agencies are ready to implement this proposition before making that proclamation. We expect it sometime next week or so.
Tell me, Amanda, how big a deal this is in Arizona, how much it's dividing people, the two different interpretations of what Prop 200 might actually end up meaning for the state.
There's just a lot of confusion now, particularly among voters and people who weren't, you know, really inside in this debate. There was a lot of confusion during the campaign about what this measure would do, and that was really the core of the opposition against this measure. It was not about, you know, what it said. It was about what they said it could do, what it might mean, what it could be expanded to in court. It was really the key to the opposition. So I think there's a lot of confusion now, and people are waiting to see what the courts do, because I think people on both sides of the issue at this point agree that the courts have to step in and officially say what this means.
Now, a lot of people make a reference to Proposition 187 in California, which was eventually declared unconstitutional or sort of dismantled in the courts. The critics of this, Amanda, are they saying, oh, well, that's what's going to happen to Prop 200 as well, or is it a little early for that?
I think it's a little unclear. Certainly the folks behind this measure drafted it with Proposition 187 in mind. They didn't include things like public education, which the federal government has said you cannot regulate at the state level. So they tried to avoid a lot of those pitfalls. What they did do, and where you know, I think that opponents may be more successful, is in this vague way it was written, and so that it is open to interpretation. Even proponents say, you know, it'll apply to different programs. It'll apply to, you know, some say it'll apply to nonprofits, some say it won't. And so it's that vague nature of it that I think is where the challenges are going to really fall. In addition, this has you know, voting requirements as well that have to be approved by the federal government. And some say, you know, proving citizenship when you register to vote would be disproportionately hard on minorities. So there certainly is expected to be a voting rights challenge potentially as well.
Well, it's a fascinating story. Amanda, I want to thank you for starting us off this morning.
No problem.
Amanda Crawford's a reporter with the Arizona Republic, joining us there on the line from her home in Phoenix. Our number, if you'd like to join us as we talk about this hour, 1-800-423-8255. So how did Arizona ever get to this point in the first place? Clearly, A majority of voters are upset about the recent rush of immigration. We'll take the story a little bit further, and we will next be talking with both Randy Pullen. He's a chairman of Yes on Proposition 200, and he filed the lawsuit against the state to protest the Attorney General's opinion on defining it. And Tamar Jacoby is a senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute. That's a policy think tank. Tamar spent much of the fall working in Arizona on this issue, and she's joining us now from the studios of WBGO in Newark, New Jersey. Hi, Tamar.
Hi.
Tell me, in your sense, what you saw while you were there. I mean, I read the news stories about the millions, the thousands of people who are picked up on the borders, and I'm interested in your perspective on what you heard, what you saw, how big a deal this is in Arizona.
It's a very big deal in Arizona. People are very upset about illegal immigration, and understandably so. As you told us, about 1,300 people get arrested every night along that border. That means that at least that many people are making it through, mm-hmm. probably more. Down in the southern part of the state, you know, people say they can't go out camping. They can't take their kids outside at night because the smugglers and the immigrants are walking through the countryside. Smuggler violence is a big deal in the cities. Smugglers put their clients or their whatever you want to call them in stash houses, filthy stash houses where they're locked up and they can't get out, and then shoot each other over these loads. Migrants do in some way use some public services, not generally the ones that are addressed in Prop 200, but they do use some public services. It is a big deal in the state. It's inconvenient and worse, dangerous in some areas, and people are fed up with it.
You wrote in a piece that you wrote for the Washington Post that you see the passage of Proposition 200 as a cry for help from Arizona voters. Is it a cry for help from the Arizona State House or from Washington?
Well, I think it's a cry to Washington.
Right.
People vote for different reasons, obviously. And I think, you know, my listening to the conversations in Arizona suggests to me that there's some people who just don't like immigrants, period. And they're voting to say that. Then there are some people who are saying, we really think this is a solution. But the majority of people I heard in Arizona were saying, we don't know what the solution is. We know that the problem is that something's broken. We know that this traffic is unbearable. And we want somebody to do something about it. And I think a lot of people know that the person who really can fix it or the body that really can fix it is the federal government, but they were hoping that this message would send, that this proposition would send a message to the federal government, do something. I don't think most people know exactly what the solution is, and certainly the proposition doesn't indicate any particular solution on the part of the feds, but it says help. And, you know, I'm hoping that President Bush will hear that and step up to the plate and pursue immigration reform as a way to help them.
Bring me, if you can, though, Tamar, right close to the ground. Did you hear people talking about their own inability to get access to, gosh, I don't know, hospitals or libraries or any of the public services that are being referred to here? Is it reasonable for people to say, you know, gosh, we've got to restrict access to these public services because there are so many people who are here illegally taking advantage of things that are my right as a taxpayer?
Well, you know, you do hear some of that, but oddly enough, the example that most people use when they talk about that is the emergency room. And, of course, this proposition will do nothing about the emergency room. Emergency health care is federally mandated, so this won't address that topic. I mean, what the campaign was really about was how broad this would be. Mm-hmm. And lots of proponents of the measure insisted that it would be narrow, that it would only apply to welfare and voting. And illegal immigrants don't benefit. Very few of them vote. I mean, people don't walk across the desert in Mexico at the risk of their life to vote. They come to work, and most of them don't even stay in Arizona. They pass through, and they don't come to get welfare because they're not eligible for welfare. So the two benefits that are written into the measure, it's really meaningless.
It's already illegal to vote in Arizona if you're not a citizen, right?
It's already illegal to get welfare if you're not a citizen, if you're illegal. It's not changing anything in those regards. The services that illegal migrants use, healthcare, schools, the criminal justice system, this is not going to affect.
And one more point of clarification there, just picking up what you last said, the I understand that the people who are pushing for a broader interpretation here are saying, hey, we need to restrict access to post-secondary education. Could it mean that illegal immigrants are prevented from going to state colleges, but then not prevented from going to, you know, grade 2 and 3 and 4?
Yes, it could mean that, because grade 2 and 3 and 4 are federally mandated. But the irony is that most of these proponents argued all during the campaign that they wanted a narrow interpretation because, of course, that's what they thought voters would pass. And now, suddenly, that it's passed, they're asking for a broad interpretation. I mean, the opponents, the people I was working with, argued all during the campaign, be careful, Arizona voters. This is going to get interpreted broadly. And the people who wanted it to pass said, no. We only mean welfare and voting. Now, all of a sudden, they're asking for a broad interpretation. It's really of a piece with, I think, you know, the dishonesty that was implicit in the campaign all along.
Now, we're hoping to talk a little bit later with Randy Pullen, chairman of Yes on Proposition 200. He takes the opposite view that it actually needs that kind of broad interpretation. We're not able to connect with him right now. Tamara, I just want you to help me with one other aspect of that. There has been the claim made that voters were kind of duped by the proponents of this, were sold, were talked into or persuaded to go for a yes vote because all it was going to refer to was voting rights and welfare. Does that hold any water?
Well, that's the case I was just trying to make, that many proponents, I don't remember exactly what Randy Pullen said, but many proponents said this is only going to be narrow. And I think that was what a lot of voters were buying, as it were. But now the proponents are saying we want it to be broader. But even that, I think a lot of voters, I think we can go one step further, because a lot of voters suspect there were a lot of court challenges to this during the campaign. Everybody knew there was a lot of confusion about the meaning. I would say, you know, 9 out of 10 Arizonans expected this to go to court now, and many expected to get thrown out of court. So I think a lot of people didn't even ever think it would get implemented. Again, they voted for it to send a message to Washington, we want something done.
And the other part about this that's interesting and worth sort of watching with a broader lens, excuse me, is that there are other states that are considering this kind, just this kind of proposition as well.
Again, I think aimed very much at the federal level. I mean, you have to remember that the entire budget for the Yes campaign was provided by an out-of-state group that's an anti-immigration reform group. And the reason they want these votes in all these different states is partly for what will happen in the state, but even more because they want to send a message to Washington, and they think the message is, we want to crack down on immigration. I think what the message people are sending is we want a solution to immigration. And President Bush's idea about the solution is that it has to involve enforcement, but not only a crackdown. It also has to involve a guest worker program. So I think that the people behind these referendums are trying to get the federal government to crack down, but I don't think most voters are voting for that.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour, a conversation about Proposition 200 passed by voters in Arizona and designed to prevent people without citizenship papers to have access to public benefits. The big question is, what are public benefits? Does that mean that you'd, in fact, have to demonstrate that you were a citizen before the fireman would point the hose at the burning house that you happen to live in? We're also talking about what messages voters are sending. Is it a message to people at the state level, or is this a cry to Washington to not only pick up an enforcement, but also a better definition of the rights of people? I'm Dick Gordon. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour, a conversation about Proposition 200, which was passed by voters in Arizona, calling for a crackdown on the status of illegal immigrants. There are many Mexicans living illegally in Arizona, particularly in many of the southern border states, and some voters are concerned that their quality of life, their access to public benefits is being constrained by that. It's part why people in Arizona chose to back Proposition 200. Tamar Jacoby is with us. She's a senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute. It's a policy think tank. And we're joined also on the line now by Mike Hessman. He's staff counsel with FAIR. That's the Federation for Immigration Reform. And we were talking, Mike, earlier with Tamar about your organization's push for support of this. Tell me why what's happening in Arizona is important to FAIR.
Well, what happened in Arizona in November in the elections was this was the only chance that the American citizens had to express their outrage over the problems of mass immigration and illegal immigration in the country. And neither Mr. Bush or Mr. Kerry wanted to touch the subject. And when the grassroots folks that launched this initiative stepped forward, we felt that like it was a very worthwhile and very significant expression of popular opinion in this country, which otherwise wouldn't have had a voice.
And what's the just before I go to you, how is it that you're seeing exactly what it is that voters have said in Arizona? Are you saying that are you with the interpretation of the attorney general who says this really only affects someone's status to vote or someone's eligibility for welfare, Mike? Or do you take it further than that?
Oh no, we've made it very clear from the very start that we saw this as applying the provisions of the 1996 Welfare Act, which created a uniform legislative scheme for the regulation of public benefits for non-citizens all across the country. And the Attorney General, who was a vociferous opponent of this, as was the governor and virtually every other member of the Arizona establishment on both sides of the aisle, has decided to sort of kill the measure effectively by putting an interpretation on it, which we feel would be unconstitutional.
But I need a more simple explanation of what public benefits you think should be affected by this vote.
We believe they're the public benefits that are listed in the federal act, and they are every grant, contract, professional or business license, and that doesn't include hunting licenses, which is a big deal out in Arizona, and every health, welfare, post-secondary education, unemployment, and other types of related public assistance that are funded by state and local funds. That's the definition in federal law.
We have with us on the line Isabel Garcia. She is a legal defender in Pima County, joining us on the line from Tucson, Arizona. And Isabel, I understand that you're also co-chair of Derechos Humanos, which is a human rights organization. You've heard that list that Mike's taken us through. How is that being heard by people in Arizona, in particular by Mexicans living in the state?
Well, as you can imagine, our community is already in a state of flux. We've received our office at the Human Rights Coalition has received over 100 calls with people applying the law, which hasn't even been implemented. But I'd really like to point out that FAIR, which funded the obtaining of the signatures, did so fraudulently. They attached to the petition an initiative that included in front of public benefits, said public welfare benefits, something which was not in the initiative. So over 90,000 of the 122,000 required were signed on petitions that included a fraudulent initiative. It didn't.
Isabel, just hold on for a sec. I want to hear Mike's response to that.
The buzzword of welfare.
Mike Hessman?
Yes.
Is that true that the signatures were gathered under the words welfare reform, not necessarily this list of benefits that you went through?
Ms. Garcia is a well-known extremist, and her point has no credibility whatsoever. They had three attempts that went up to the Supreme Court in Arizona to try and make this point, and they had unlimited legal resources from the SEIU union, which has large numbers of illegal alien members, et cetera, et cetera. And they had their day in court, and the court said they had no case whatsoever.
That's not true.
This is not true. This is not true. On the point that Isabel is making, the court found that indeed about 90% of the petitions that were circulated to be signed were inaccurate and had a false word, a narrowing word, the word welfare, inserted in the petitions. And the only reason the court didn't throw it out was because it was a week before less than a week before the election. So Isabel is exactly right that that claim was found to have merit. The petitions that were circulated were fraudulent, and you know, for FAIR to deny it is you know.
Let's move ahead, though, not to say that that's not an important point and won't necessarily be something that is argued once again in court. But I'm trying to figure out, now that voters have passed this and it's gone or on its way back to the courts. Isabel, back to you. The people who are complaining about this, what are they saying? Are they afraid to send kids to school? Are they afraid to go to work? How are people responding to news of the Proposition 200?
Absolutely. We've had calls in the Derechos Humanos office complaining everything from being denied at the University Medical Center without proof of citizenship to being denied food stamps for citizen children to, of course, self-imposed fears because they believe that 200 is already the law. We've run the entire gamut. We've had racial slurs and racial profiling against those of us. My family's been here in 5 generations, and we continue to feel this kind of racial profiling directly because of Prop 200.
Now, you're part of a public information campaign, Isabel. What is it that you're saying to Mexican immigrants in Arizona now?
We are telling people that Prop 200 is not the law yet, that it hasn't been clarified. Unlike what the FAIR representative is saying, this provision, this law is amending a particular title and statute in Arizona specifically relating to welfare and specifically relating to voting rights. And in fact, they argued that we were on a scare campaign, that it wasn't going to affect any other public benefit. And now they're arguing, of course, the contrary. We know that they picked Arizona because the Border Patrol strategy has been to funnel everybody through Arizona. And so, of course, we've got problems. Of course, most immigrants don't remain in Arizona. Most immigrants, of course, have jobs all across this country, creating wealth across this country. And FAIR has been an extremist group on the other side, attempting to blame immigrants for our failed border policies, for our failed immigration attempts. And this measure really is not to send a message to D.C. FAIR and these other groups intend to stop any real dialogue about any real immigration reform. That is what they fear, because they know that the public and our elected officials alike are coming to grips with who are immigrants, what are their contributions, what has been our role in bringing immigrants and luring them into our country, and in order to thwart.
Let me, if I can, just stop you there for half a second, Isabel. I do want to turn to Mike Hessman on this question of racism, because I've seen it come up a number of times in a number of responses to the vote in Proposition 200 and to the involvement of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. What about the accusation that really what this is just a disguised form of racism that has to do with moving or keeping immigrants out rather than finding a place for them in the country?
Well, playing the race card is always the tactic of last resort of people who can't make their case based on facts and law. Our bottom line on this is at least 47% in the most conservative poll of Hispanics voted for our measure, and 65% of non-white, non-Hispanics supported it. So I think that speaks for itself.
Tamar, your sense of how this is dividing the communities in Arizona.
Yeah, I don't think most people who voted for this voted for racist reasons. I mean, obviously people don't talk about their racism, so it's hard to gauge, but I didn't hear really anything much bordering on racism in Arizona. What I heard is frustration with illegal immigration, not what people are asking the federal government. I think Isabel Garcia is right. FAIR wants to shut down the dialogue about immigration reform, but I think most people in Arizona want to open up the dialogue about immigration reform, not what rights should these people have, but how do we stop the illegal flow? And, you know, I think there's an important debate to be had about that. I have my answer. President Bush has his answer. It involves a guest worker program. But and Fair's answer is you know, I don't know, machine guns on the border, which wouldn't work. I don't think people in Arizona know.
Although
what the
people
answer
in Arizona,
is.
Though, Tamar, just to be fair, people in Arizona do seem to be generally in favor of toughening up patrols on the border.
But the point is that that's not a solution. That we've tried toughening up patrols on the border for a decade. We've tripled the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol in Arizona has grown by probably a factor of, I don't know, something close to 10, mm-hmm. and it doesn't stop anyone. The point is that in order to stop people, we're going to have more realistic quotas, i.e. some kind of worker program. And a lot of people in Arizona understand that, and they want the government to step in and do that.
All right. A lot of people want to join this conversation. I'm just going to sort of pause our own for a moment to let some of our listeners in. A reminder, our number is 1-800-423-8255. To Raleigh, North Carolina for our first call. Shannon's with us. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. What are you thinking?
This is the first time I've heard about this situation in Arizona. I live in North Carolina, which has a huge Hispanic immigrant population.
Yeah.
And I see what it does. I have a child. I have a job. But I walk in to Babies R Us and wonder if I can afford to pay for my diapers. I buy the cheapest car seat, and I was in line and saw a woman with a child and three gentlemen. They purchased almost $700 worth of product without vouchers and took that $700 bill down to $120, paid in cash, and then went out and got into a brand-new Ford F-350 pickup truck. I see what it does in our communities here.
So what would you change, Shannon? Would you like to move to a system in North Carolina where any kind of public benefit, such as the assistance that you're describing just now, you'd need to show proof of citizenship?
I do believe so. I think I agree with the person who was talking. Something needs to be done. I have a friend whose parents applied for citizenship when she was born. She became a United States citizen 4 years ago. She didn't get into this country until she was 22. I think we're very lenient on people just because they can run across the border, yet we held anybody else coming into this country at a much higher standard. And what
Shannon, can I ask you to just hold for half a second? I want to bring Isabel Garcia back into the conversation. Isabel, you've heard people make this kind of case before. What's the articulate other side of the story?
It's not a matter of being lenient. I think we need to understand that since the early 1900s, we, and I mean we in terms of the governmental policies, have encouraged immigration because you may not know it, ma'am, but many of those immigrants that have come and done the work have actually created much of the wealth in this country. In fact, they support and prop up the Social Security system without ever having any hope of having any of that returned. And so I think this country needs to enter into a very serious dialogue about who is coming in, about what it is that they're doing, what is the true contribution, what is the true cost, and what have we done as a government since the early 1900s to encourage this immigration.
Isabel, in what you're saying to Shannon, are you saying, when you say immigration, are you saying both illegal immigrants as well as people who are here legally?
Oh, yes. Undocumented immigration has been the place where employers in this country have been able to have cheap labor. And we are against that, too. We in this border state see the suffering. 231 people died in Arizona, Sonora alone. In the border of one state, less than 300 miles, they died. 231 bodies were found. So we want immigration reform. We don't think that this is the kind of immigration we should have. We should have orderly immigration. We should maybe perhaps look at the SOLVE Act, which the Democrats introduced this past year. We need to look at really look at this situation and stop being so hypocritical about this.
I wonder, Mike Hessman. Yeah, sorry, go ahead. Tamar, just hang on for half a second. I'm interested in wondering whether or not Mike Hessman would agree that immigration reform at a national level, a formal guest worker program, some of the things that have been talked about rather than going at it at a state-by-state basis, isn't really where the U.S. ought to be right now.
Well, it's a national crisis, so ultimately it does have to be solved at the national level. However, guest worker programs, which are a euphemism for amnesty, have failed in the United States ever since they were tried, and they've failed in every other country in the world where they've tried, and they've led to increased inequality, exploitation, ethnic conflict, and all the other kinds of ills that are associated in the public mind with illegal immigration in the United States. They don't work.
But you see, the point is, Dick, that we do have we do need these workers. We do, in effect, wink and invite them to come in and do jobs. Mm-hmm. But then we don't. There is no legal way, or hardly a usable way, legal way for people to come here to work. So we're using the workers.
That's not true.
Looking for them, and there are no. If you're a worker in Mexico and want to come do a job in America that is open and needs doing, you can't get here unless you're related to somebody who's already here. You can't just come here and say, I'm a worker and I want to do that work. And that's what the president would like to create, is a way that we can give these people the dignity of legality and avoid the problems we're having in Arizona and still get those jobs done.
We've got another call joining us now from Raleigh, North Carolina. James is on the line. Hi, James.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a quick comment and a question. It's interesting that another caller from North Carolina had just been on, and so you can get a sense for the dramatic increase in immigration we've had here from Hispanic countries. However, the comment is, it's sort of like a supply and demand situation. And then the potential solution to that is, it seems that the workers that I see that are working here illegally have, they're working and they're lowering our prices. The businesses are benefiting from them. Why not allow the businesses to pay their social or public finances to take the burden off of the public sector?
And same thing, James, if they were to be hired individually. I mean, I know a lot of people who work as undocumented immigrants, work as nannies, they work as landscapers, that sort of thing. They're not all, flipping pancakes at IHOP.
Right. Well, I'm not too familiar with the idea of the guest worker, but similar to what you say, you've heard the situation where wealthy people hire nannies, they have to pay. Even if they're illegal, they have to pay for their Social Security taxes, et cetera.
There are two debates here, no question about it. One is what to do with undocumented immigrants who are in the country and the range of employment that they have. We're going to have to take a short break right here. We're going to come back and continue the conversation, but want to try and keep the focus on Proposition 200, voted on and passed by people in Arizona, giving the state the right to, in effect, crack down on people based on whether or not they have citizenship papers. Do they need to show citizenship papers in order just to vote and perhaps collect welfare benefits? Or should it be much broader than that? The Federation for American Immigration Reform is taking this case to court in Arizona, trying to push so it includes many other things, including access to unemployment assistance and we've been through the list. We'll take a look at it when we come back. But we do want to have you join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour, a conversation about Proposition 200 in Arizona. Isabel Garcia is with us. She's the legal defender in Pima County and co-chair of Derechos Humanos. It is a human rights organization that looks after border issues and immigrants in Arizona. We also have with us Tamar Jacoby, senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute, and Mike Hessman, staff counsel with FAIR. That's the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Next call from Richmond, Virginia. Bruce is on the line. Hi, Bruce.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I've got a very simple question and a couple ways to illustrate it, is why is the double standard? I mean, there's this tiny little island nation of Montserrat where the volcano has overflown and driven them out of their home, and they're in Boston now, about 300 people, and our government is killing itself to get rid of these people. And I can never forget the picture of Ilya Gonzalez in Miami with a federal officer standing there with an M16 pointed at the boy's head to physically remove him back to Cuba. And there's a difference between accommodating people and pandering. And I fail to understand why we've got this double standard where this...
You think we're at a stage right now, Bruce, do you think we're at a stage right now where, in fact, the United States is pandering to undocumented workers?
Well, how can you describe it where this community of people in Boston are seeking asylum because their island home is sinking?
Okay, let's not confuse the issue. I mean, I think that we all know the story that's happening in the southern border states, and I mean that's the place where we're dealing with numbers that are so dramatic that people there are saying, you know, we can't deal with it just as New Mexicans or Arizonans. We need Washington's involvement here. We need actually a policy that would work here.
Go ahead.
If I could say, we are not pandering to immigrants in the most minimum. What we do, however, is we do pander to Cuban exiles, anybody that is fleeing a country that we say persecutes its citizens. We do pander to those. But those that we need for exploitation, for work in our country, that create wealth for our country, those are the individuals that the hammer falls on, that FAIR would like to just smash them without looking at the fact that our country depends on immigrants, and if demographically, if you look at it, will continue to do so in greater numbers.
We're going to go to Mike Hessman in just a minute, but Tamar, you wanted to jump in here.
Well, Isabel's right. These people are doing work that we need done. Arizonans are also right that they don't like a situation where these people are yes, they're there doing useful work, but they're illegal. And so that does create all kinds of problems, and that's what we need to address. We need them to do the work. Immigration is good for the country. What's bad is the illegality. How do you address that? Well, President Bush believes, and many Democrats believe, that the best way is with a guest worker program. And I think, you know, that's where this points. That's where Arizona points us. Solve it with a real solution.
It does seem, Mike Hessman, that FAIR has its back turned on this economic part of the argument, that if, in fact, all the undocumented workers were to be gathered together and sent back to wherever they came from, that somehow that wouldn't have an effect on an economy like Arizona's.
It won't happen, and FAIR is not advocating that. But if it did, if all the illegal aliens disappeared tomorrow, there would be a very beneficial effect on Arizona.
Beneficial?
Yes, absolutely. On the citizens of Arizona who have to compete with these people, the contractors and the small businessmen who are being driven out of business by this race to the bottom where they can't compete with illegal wages, the growing inequality that you see in all high immigration states, where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and the middle class and the working class get pounded. This view that immigration, mass immigration, is beneficial is typical of the elites in our country. And there is no issue in this country other than immigration on which the views of the elites, people like Ms. Jacoby, who she represents, and the views of the common citizens are more far apart. Every scientific opinion poll has showed this, that the elites, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, are totally out of sync with the views of the average citizens on this issue.
Go ahead, Tamar.
But you see, I dispute that. I think that I think most elites agree that illegality, the situation that Arizonans face, the people walking through their property and using their services and the shootouts in the streets, elites and the people agree that that's bad. And I think that both elites and the people recognize that immigrants doing work for the country are good. The point is I think lots of Arizonans were not voting to say we don't like immigrants. Most Arizonans live in a situation where their economy is held up by immigrants, and they see that. What they don't like is the illegality, and I think elites and the people are in sync with that.
Let's go to Durham, North Carolina, for a call from Claudio. Hi, Claudio.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling. What are you thinking?
I'm a U.S. citizen now, but I came to the States with an H visa. I'm a professional. And then I got a green card, and then after several years, I opted for citizenship, and I got my citizenship. I wonder how in the world you're going to do anything, even being a legal immigrant under a visa, if you cannot have a driver's license.
Mm-hmm. And so
citizenship takes around 10 years to get.
And so what you're saying is that the country needs to make more space for people before that 10-year period comes, or are you – I'm sorry, Claudia, I may be misunderstanding you here.
It's not, my point is, if you need – do you really need a citizenship to have a driver license?
Right.
Or an H visa like mine?
No,
that's a professional visa, because you're talking about citizenship.
Service.
Okay. Can I ask you something else, though, Claudia? You came here on an HB visa, upgraded that to a green card, and eventually to citizenship.
Yes, sir.
In going through all those legal steps, did you harbor resentment against people who were sneaking in across the border?
Absolutely not. I came from Argentina, so I didn't come across the border.
Yeah.
And I came as a guest worker, basically, because the company was looking for a professional doing what I was doing. And I worked in medical imaging by that time. But
here's what I don't understand, and maybe I'm missing something, but I just need you to explain this to me. You go through all the legal steps. You see all these people who are not going through the legal steps, but that's not a problem with you.
The question is different. I came legally, but it took almost 10 years for me to get citizenship. It would mean that if I went to Arizona, I would be 10 years without a driver license.
No, not even under...
No. He's missing
the point. Because citizenship is a big word, right?
Yeah. Even no Prop 200. Even Prop 200. Even Prop 200 will not deny people with green cards from benefits. No one's saying you have to be a citizen to vote.
Prop 200 will only deny illegal aliens driver's licenses. Legal non-immigrants, legal immigrants, U.S. citizens would all be treated alike.
Isabel, I may have been struggling a little too hard to try and understand something with Claudio there, but I'm sure that you can help me. I've also read in the Arizona press comments from Hispanic business people, Hispanic residents, citizens of the country, expressing their frustration, their anger with the number of undocumented immigrants, saying, you know, we need to speak out because when we speak out, that's not automatically seen as a racist comment, that the system now is so overwhelmed by people coming across the border without papers that it has become unfair.
Well, you know, Mexican citizens U.S. citizens, excuse me, of Mexican descent are bombarded with the same media. We read the same news. We hear the same newscasts. We're fed the same misinformation about immigrants. And no, I disagree that the systems in Arizona are overloaded. In fact, welfare is not given to undocumented immigrants. They were not able to produce any shred of evidence that immigrants were receiving welfare unlawfully, nor were they able to produce more than two cases of migrants voting in an election. Now, we shouldn't go through a huge expense. It's going to cost at least $28 million for the state agencies to try to brace for this, according to the governor, and with no shred of evidence. So Mexican citizens that are of Mexican descent, of course, I don't believe the FAIRS statistics that he cited. But in fact, yes, this was not a matter of all racists voting for Prop 200. It's that organizations such as FAIR and other racist anti-immigrant organizations were pushing on this, utilizing any argument they could, whether the racist argument or whether, you know, they're just a burden and we only want the undocumented people out of here, not the lawful ones. The fact of the matter is this entire community is divided. There is a lot of racial profiling that even those that voted for Prop 200 of Mexican-American descent are not going to be in favor. And
Isabel, let me stop you there. I do want to make sure that we get as many calls in as we can. I'm going next to Chesapeake, Virginia. Barbara's joining us on the phone. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. What do you think?
Well, I wanted to comment on the racial profiling because I'm an immigrant, and I am blonde and blue-eyed, and I'm 6 feet tall, and nobody thinks I'm an immigrant because of how I look. And when I mention it to people, they kind of look at me in shock. So I do think that there's like an elephant in the room here. You know, that people have to address the fact that racism is a big part of the whole thing. I said, nobody would ever, I never get challenged. I would never be questioned because I am blonde.
So when people talk about immigrants in the country, they're talking about people who they identify as immigrants, people they see?
Exactly, that they have this preconceived idea of somebody who has dark hair, dark eyes, they speak with an accent. Like I said, I am usually, when I tell people I'm an immigrant, they kind of look at me like, you couldn't possibly be one.
All right, Barbara, I want to go next to Spokane, Washington. Michael's joining us on the line from there. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Do you think this is about racism?
It's very fine line in my point of view, because I live in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And I, when I was stationed in El Paso, Fort Bliss, the biggest problem I have, I favor the 200. I'm Hispanic. The thing is that there's a criteria to enter this country. If you enter the country illegally, it's a violation of the federal law. And I think that the crackdown should be specifically for illegal immigrants.
And you think the crackdown should be on those people when they're in the country, or do you think that it should be done at the border? What's your best solution here?
I think it should be, it's got to be attacked on both ends. Because I know personally in San Antonio and in El Paso, the people premeditate coming over, for example, pregnancy. You'll have a pregnant girl, and when they get into their eighth or ninth month, they want to jump across the border where they can hide until they're in labor, and then they go to the county hospital, and there's the birth of a child.
I want to turn back, if I can, to Tamar Jacoby here on where this is
heading.
Yeah,
you see, the problem is that the proposition's not going to stop anyone from coming. People who, first of all, if you're coming to give birth in the hospital, which very few people do, you're still going to be able to do that. You can still go to an emergency room and give birth. But people who've risked their lives in the desert, walked across the 120-degree desert with a smuggler, you know, been stashed in a safe house, left their family in Mexico, they're not going to not come. They're not going to think twice about coming because they're afraid they might get carded in Arizona. It's not going to stop anyone. And what Arizonans want is a policy that will stop people from coming, or at least help them have them come legally rather than illegally. So the point is that Proposition 200, whether or not it's racist, whether or not most people behind it are racist or not, it's not going to solve the problem in the long run. And Arizonans are going to be just as frustrated a year from now, and meanwhile they're going to be, you know, waiting on long lines at the DMV.
Just a really quick question from you, Isabel, because we're short on time here. But it seems to me that if the buzz in the community is such that some people aren't going to the hospital or sending their kids to school, in fact, it might discourage some people from coming to Arizona, no?
No, absolutely not. As Mr. Kobe has commented, the thousands really that have been funneled into the dangerous deserts of Arizona have absolutely no clue. They are not coming here for education, for welfare, for anything other than a job, and some to reunite with their families. But most are coming here for sheer economic survival. And so they are not going to know really anything about 200. It's those residents that live here.
Isabel, I got to stop you. We are, I'm afraid, out of time. I want to thank you for being with us on the program, though. Isabel Garcia, Pima County Legal Defender. And Mike Hessman, thank you for your time as well.
You're welcome, sir.
Mike Hessman is staff counsel with the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Tamar Jacoby for helping us through this. I want to thank you especially. Thanks.
Great to be here.
Tamar's senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.